Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here for the next in our expectations series. Today, we're going to look at two players, Ronnie Stanley, who I'm sure everybody will want to hear about, and Jason Jones, the nose tackle out of Auburn. Doing that with me is Jason Smith of Huddle It Up Films. Jason, how you doing?
Doing really well, Ken. Thanks for having me back on for this series. Enjoying it. Have some to catch up on. So as a listener, I enjoy these.
Always a real pleasure to do these shows. Discussions are fantastic. Wanted to make sure we give your show a plug up front. We'll get one in the back end too. But if you're not listening to Huddle It Up Films, outstanding series when it's on. I think you're taking a brief hiatus now yourself, right?
That's right. Summertime, I kind of take a break, mental reset, try to do some more things around the house, more things with the family, but there's plenty of stuff on the channel. The channel itself is busy because before the draft season, I do highlights for all Ravens, and they're more scouting cut-ups. So for Ronnie Stanley, for example, you can see a lot of the stuff that we're going to talk about tonight on his scouting cut up, all the mobility. So, you know, a lot of channels, it's hard to find stuff on offensive linemen or safeties or, you know, cornerbacks if they're not interceptions. I'll have all that for all the Ravens who had enough to qualify. And I'm putting together a few new things, Ken. I think I might be releasing something of Adisa Isaacs, all his snaps, Snoozy Kane, all his snaps. So I'll have some things filtering in throughout the summer. But as far as a show like this, I don't start back up until July, August.
All right. Very good. It's a off season for a lot of folks. So let's talk about Jason Jones. He's the undercard to this. 6'6", 325 out of Auburn. Got nice long arms at 33 7/8. Ran a 5.36 40. And no one seems to know the guy's age. He does not have an age listed. Maybe the Beast has his age listed in there, but the Ravens roster has NA for his age, which is a little unusual. Had an 804 three cone, so a very poor tester overall at the combine. Or actually, I'm not sure if this is combine or pro day.
And with the way he tests, he's going to have to stop the run. That combined with, you know, just sack and pressure numbers. I think he had 2 sacks his freshman year and none since. So this is a player that's brought in for run defense, and we can get into some of his strengths and weaknesses, but not someone I scouted during draft season, way down on the list. So the name surprised me, and I had trouble finding a lot of snaps for him. Rotational player.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly true. I looked at him only after the Ravens selected him, UDFA'd him, you know, signed him. He does look enormous, even the SEC, so he really stands out as being the big body on the field immediately. That at Ravens camp, by the way, there's already a number of other very large men, and Nash Hutmaker was actually considerably smaller than Jason Jones, but I thought that would have been a great competition this summer. The Ravens, for whatever reason, initially announced Nash Hutmaker was a UDFA signing, and then apparently he might have gotten to the building and possibly had some problem with a physical that kept him out. So it may have been a case of they asked him to stay around. Anyway, Tampa Bay got him away from the Ravens, which is unfortunate. And now it's Jason Jones versus John Jenkins and a Travis Jones also. So we have a lot of J's floating around at the nose tackle position for the Ravens. Just briefly in terms of the film, very big two-gap presence. His primary job is denying space. He's not Michael Pierce as a pocket pusher. Michael Pierce really had that as a, you know, move the line of scrimmage fairly effectively. We got used to that, frankly, spoiled with how good Michael Pierce was at it. He does set his feet well, I think, versus defensive tackles, versus double teams, I should say, that he's got his feet at those angles, which are basically set up to handle the pressure coming from those two sides. And that's nice to see.
He looks fairly well coached, and you know, 4-year player. So I'm and he was highly recruited. When I tried to dig up information, he was a 4-star recruit on one site and a 3-star recruit on another site. Went to Oregon and transferred immediately to Auburn. 4 years in a row of play. So I'm guessing he's 22, unless he was held back in school or something like that. But it looked like a common career path for a nose tackle or someone who wasn't going to get drafted early in terms of 4-year player, major school, come out, looks pretty well coached. I would say, you know, what I picked up on scouting Ken was his pad level and his ability to stack and shed. I would say inconsistent. You see some brilliant reps where he's really controlling the action, and some other reps where if it's a double team coming his way, he's too high and can get moved off the spot, for especially for a big guy. And not impressed with his ability to finish all the time as well. It looked like I'm not sure if he's getting credited with missed tackles on some of these attempts, but just not a lot of range. And that, you know, it showed up in his testing as well. So I had a couple of more notes on the film, but I'll just kick that back to you. You're on mute. You're on mute, Ken.
Somebody just hit a big space on their bingo card there. Yeah. Pad level is definitely his big problem. Sloppy athlete. You know, one of the things you see is he's not as bad as the Florida guys, but he's not really in shape for a nose tackle. He doesn't carry his weight the way you would hope that he doesn't carry his weight like Travis Jones does. Let's put it that way. He's more like Michael Pierce, which is, you know, if you had your choice, you'd be more like Travis Jones. He has almost not played on passing downs, period. He played just 46% of his snaps as a pass defender in his career, which is extremely low. And you know, he's basically a pure early down run defender. I think if he makes the Ravens, I think we'll see him in games be one of those guys who gets retired early in the game if the Ravens are leading. So it's, you know, you get up 10 points, there's no need for Jason Jones anymore because there's too high a chance the other team's passing. You want Travis in there, and you maybe even will go with some different looks where a 3-tech is playing over the nose, over center, I should say, just to give you some additional pass rush juice. But you wouldn't want to have Jason Jones in there unless you're really on first down. And even late in the game, there's the 2-minute drill late in the game, down by 14. There's no reason ever to have a player like that on the field.
No. And you know, I've seen his height between 6'5" and 6'6". So 6'5", 6'6", and 325, if that's accurate, that's not an incredibly bulky player. I mean, Michael Pierce is the extreme. He was 6 foot tall and weight unknown. But if you're 6'6", 325, that's actually a little bit, I don't want to say light. Maybe it's hard to call a 325-pound nose tackle light. But I feel like he has room to grow, to add muscle, get his frame in better shape. Because, you know, if he's going to make it in the NFL, he has got to be a run stuffer. I mean, you know, his entire profile, his athletic makeup, his history, it tells you that he's not going to be, like you were saying, on the field in, you know, when it's 3rd and 10 late in the game when the Ravens are up. It's just, he's not going to be an option. Ideally, he'd be a guy that you would bring in versus 12-4 personnel versus 22-13, some heavy personnel to play those 5-man fronts and to be in the middle of that. I will say there were times on the tape where, you know, I would knock him heavily and say, man, this guy, you know, if this is what all he's bringing to the table, he's not going to be an NFL player. But there were also moments of brilliance on the tape where I saw him stack, shed, be in a great position and finish like an NFL nose tackle. So I would say, you know, for him to make it, Ken, he's just got to keep building on that, increase his body. I think he's strong enough. I think he just needs to use it better. My main worry with him, Ken, is his recognition skills. Some of these sheds were late to me, you know, where he's dismissing his man a split second too late. And that's all it takes for the running back to, you may not be able to bring him down. You only get a piece of him or something like that. So football IQ and recognition, I think, could improve, even though he's well coached.
I mean, as a nose tackle, there's a couple of ways he could be really effective against the run. And one is to be a 2-gap, you ain't going to move me no matter what, double team acceptor. And if he could do that, he can help as a pass rush component as well. So even when you rush four, you're getting good one-on-one matchups on the other three. Travis Jones gives you that in spades. That's Travis Jones' big contribution to the Ravens pass rush. But as a run defender, he's really got to do one of two things. He's either got to shed, like you say, or he has to be able to push to redefine that line of scrimmage and get somebody to the backfield and cause the running back to make tough choices by denying space. And I just don't see him as the kind of leverage player who's going to be able to do that the way that Pierce did. Pierce had physical advantages, which made him a monstrous difficulty. Travis Jones has problems playing high sometimes too, but he's a Brahma bull, you know, moving through there. That might even not be a big enough animal to compare him to. He's a stud moving through there. Jason Jones, there's time needed in the weight room. I think he's still a little soft at the upper body. And more than that, you mentioned the frame size at 6'6", 325. He's still apple-shaped, and he's carrying a lot of that around his waist. So he needs a reproportionalization of that body to pick up muscle mass, pick up, you know, bulk in his arms. By the way, I want to toss this out. This is a little bit off the beaten path, but Trenton Simpson is a guy that you had on the expectation series, I believe, last year.
I did.
The big question was whether or not he could turn, you know, what happened in the Pittsburgh game into a big season. Mm-hmm. I say, I've just seen Trenton Simpson again. The guy looks jacked. He looks enormous relative to what he looked like last year. Doesn't look like he ever played safety the way he looks. He looks like he might have played defensive end or something. I mean, just looks much bigger this year. So I'm optimistic about how that'll.
I hope so. And, you know, Trenton Simpson is, you know, what we talk about with Jason Jones with the eyes and recognition. It's just all about above the shoulders with Trenton. Yep. I mean, it's just, you know, I would say that I was a little too optimistic. But I would also say in my defense of Trenton, because I did not hear your Trenton Simpson show, I saw my name brought up, that I do think that the safety play did not do him any favors, and I would have liked to have seen him play more with Kyle and Ardarius behind him. But, you know, that's not to excuse him totally. But, yeah, with Jason Jones, just to get back to it, 6'6", 6'5", 6'6", Ken, you have, if you're a nose tackle, you have got to be conscious of your pad level. I do think that when it comes to something that it's hard to measure, natural strength, somebody's, you know, country strong, you know, he doesn't tear it up in the weight room or look like a Greek god, but he's just naturally strong. I do think Jason Jones has some of that. And I think maybe it's a possibility that he's coasted on that, you know, four-star recruit
maybe
comes in, look, I'm strong, I don't need to work on that. Maybe I'll work on my pass rush. Maybe I'll work on this and that. But for him to make it in the NFL, he's got to turn that into a super strength to be a nose tackle.
Yeah. He's got, you know, what he has that could be a really exciting advantage for him to use on some early downs is if you want to do some stunting and twisting early on. And there are a lot of teams who won't do a ton of this, but they'll do some of it. He's a guy who could cross the face of a guard and hit a center first and hard. And that could be very effective. He'd be an underneath guy, I would see as pretty much at the only. In his case, he's a guy you definitely don't want to be the looper. Doesn't really have that kind of quickness about him, but I'd be excited to see that. And I'd be excited to see if Chuck Smith can teach him the way and to do that well.
The last thing I would like to say is body composition is definitely huge, but you know, you wonder how much art there is in the bull rushing. That's something that I'm not educated enough, but I think he is going to have to bull rush too. As much of the emphasis, in other words, if you are, we saw with Travis Jones, he commands double teams sometimes. Madubuike was third in the NFL in being double teams, one stat I saw. But if you can block despite how big he is, if you can block him, block him with one, then he's not a finisher. He's not providing any value.
No, his value, negative value.
negative value. So he has got to prove that if you block me one-on-one, I'm at least going to push you into the quarterback's lap. Yeah. So, yeah. The bull rush is definitely we mentioned his play strength and his ability to run is the key, but he needs to pick up his bull rush to at least threaten an undersized guard.
Ravens had multiple guys in recent years who were good at maintaining their pad level and were great players when they did, or very good players at least. You got Calais Campbell recently, Brent Urban, Chris Canty are guys who could play tall And, you know, one of the things we saw from both Campbell and Urban, they're more recent. My visual memory of Canty is not as good, was that they would play a little bit off the ball in order to maintain their pad level and extend into the offensive linemen so that they wouldn't get up underneath their pads and play too high. And that's something you really can't do at nose tackle. Nose tackle, you got to be right on top of the ball. And I can't remember seeing a nose tackle play off ball like that. So it's not a great position for a 6'6 guy to do. Now, I know there are guys in the NFL that are about that size, but usually if they are, they're so oversized in every way. Like Haloti Ngata was 6'4 and 340-ish.
Jordan Davis comes to mind, 6'6 and Davis, just huge.
Good point. Right. So there are people doing it, but it's much tougher to get it done at the nose tackle position than it would be if he were a five for certain, but even a three.
Yeah, absolutely. So he's pigeonholed into that 0-1 tech, you know, too high maybe, but like, yeah, he's going to, you know, I think we outlined it pretty well. Yeah. Again, though, I will say that the Ravens have scouted him way harder than I have, and probably you have too, because it's tough sifting through tape when the player isn't on the field all the time. So I don't know what he looked like last year, what he looked like the year before. And I'm sure the Ravens know all these things and have a better feel for his game. So I was kind of excited to see which UDFAs we brought in at this position, specifically the nose tackles, because it was such a deep group, Ken, that, I studied almost 30 of them this year. And, you know, guys like Nash Hutmaker were barely making it into that list of guys. So I knew that there were more players out there that I had no idea about. So I'm excited to see Jason Jones this preseason.
All right. Let's talk about what a good season is for Jason Jones from your perspective.
Good season is kind of tough to tell, but he plays well enough to, if not make this practice squad, to be on a practice squad somewhere. And I think it's all going to be dependent on how he plays in the preseason. There are very few things I look forward to for preseason, Ken, because I'm just a nervous Nelly when it comes to injuries. Like, if you could tell me that we could skip through this and get to the season with the roster we have now healthy, especially the way things are with this Ravens roster, I'd be happy. But Jason Jones is one of those guys that, if it's not him, CJ Ravenel, or some of the other guys we've saw, last preseason, I felt like we got pushed off the line of scrimmage and ran on way too easily. That Packers game stands out. I'm like, this isn't the Ravens of old, Ken. Remember our backups to the backups to the backups in preseason would just dominate. They couldn't run against our third team and their third team. So that's when I want to see us get back to. So have a good enough preseason, Ken, to where he is on the radar somewhere in the NFL.
Okay, I'm similar. I said plays well in the preseason, is ready to step in if anything happens to Jenkins or Jones. Now, that could happen before the season starts. So it could be even he makes the roster. But I think more likely he starts on the practice squad. He is the kind of player who I think I don't think he'd be a waiver claim right away, but it's possible. It depends on how other teams' depth holds up. But if Jones is cut, he probably is retained by the Ravens. And the Ravens, I think, would elevate him for some games where the nose tackle depth is challenged by dings and whatnot, and they need a second guy. I think he stands a pretty good chance to eventually be elevated to the 53 if something happens to Jenkins or you know, God forbid, something happens to Jones. I think he plays some snap on the defense in a 60th percentile season. And the thing is, if he gets elevated, he's going to play. Because he'll be the backup nose. There'll be no other reason for him to be on the team. There's no other reason than for him to be the fifth defensive lineman. And that spot gets some snaps, whether they like it or not. That spot gets some snaps. And I think he could get between 70 and 150 in the scenario I'm painting here. In addition to learning to play and compete in the NFL, which I think is a lot about, there's some learning keys. There's some head stuff. There's learning the pad level that we talked about extensively. But he improves his nutrition and conditioning and converts some of that weight from around his belly into muscle mass. That's what I'd like to see. The Ravens do, by the way, have a competing guy in camp that is interesting to keep an eye on because he never played college football. Maybe we talk about him a little bit after we talk about what a great season is.
Sure. Yeah, for a great season for me is that he fends off – I don't think it's out of the question. As a matter of fact, I'll put it at over 50%, Ken, that we bring in a veteran, another veteran, okay. like a John Jenkins, to compete, because
veteran than John Jenkins, you're saying?
Yes. And even another one, because I just feel like there are guys that just aren't on our radar that can step up and stuff the run. Just a huge human being out there. But a great season for me for Jason Jones is that he fends off everybody. Maybe another free agent that comes in, but CJ Ravenel, Adedeo Adele, CJ Okoye. Those are the other guys on the defensive line where he fends them off, Ken. And he is clearly nose tackle number three, I guess, is what I would phrase it.
After behind Travis Jenkins still.
Yeah, I think Jenkins definitely has the track record that I don't think there's any way Jason Jones comes in year one in the NFL and would unseat John Jenkins. John Jenkins has the track record, the body build, all that, doesn't need a year in the weight room. So maybe I'm a little lower than Jason Jones than you, but I think for a great season is that he maintains that spot as nose tackle three.
Okay, fair enough. I am higher on him, I think, than at the 80th percentile anyway. I don't know where, if you'd say this is an 80th percentile result for you, that he is clearly the number three guy. He does have to win that, but I think he really wins those things with my good season. He beats out Okoye and some others. Okoye could very well be on the practice squad, though. He's enormous. He's freaking enormous.
So, Ken, would you just a question to follow up for what I said? Where would you put that we bring in another just run stuffer?
Okay, so here's what I think is the likely path. I don't think it necessarily happens before the season, but I think there's a chance that Jenkins loses the job because he's not the player he was before. He gets hurt. He all of a sudden looks old. The Ravens take a look at him and say, no, this isn't the same guy we saw last year with Las Vegas, last 2 years. Jenkins played a lot of snaps the last 2 years. I don't know if, I think the Ravens are betting on the fact that by playing less snaps, he can be better than he was the last 2 years, but he's 36, or he will be this year. And that's really old. Now, the other thing about Jenkins is he's a one-year solution. So he's got to outplay Jones by a lot to make that the right call. So, I mean, if you have a rookie on UDFA, you have him potentially for 4 years, and you would certainly like to make that selection if that were anywhere close to the correct selection. Now, I know the Ravens are vying for a title and whatnot, but I kind of agree with you that problem can be fixed on the fly if they like Jones enough. So let's say they're indifferent to the two players. Jones and Jenkins both have played okay. Maybe Jenkins hasn't even played that much, but he looks a little slower in camp, doesn't maybe look like he's into the game the same way he has been. I think that's actually kind of unlikely. He just looks a little slower, looks a little less physical than he's been before, maybe in the preseason. And they give the job to Jason Jones. The reason they do that is because they know they can go to the street, and nose tackle is a big size and shape pool of, in terms of the size and shape, and they can go and get another guy. And you look back to 2019, they got D'Amato Pecco, they got Jelly Belly Ellis. In the middle of the season, those guys were part of the group that saved the season for that defense. So I think it can be done. I think it's one of the positions where you don't need to be entirely set going into the season, but it sure would be nice to have a chance. I think it's also a possibility Okoye beats him out. I didn't have Okoye listed among the expectation series, but he is one of the guys that I think has a chance to beat out Jones for sure, and possibly Jenkins for a spot. Let me go through the great season for Jones. So wins the backup nose tackle role outright from Jenkins. The Ravens do not feel like they need to add a veteran. One of five defensive linemen activated for every game when healthy. Plays approximately 250 to 300 snaps, primarily on rundowns. And by the way, if he's on the roster, that will happen. It's not like he has to do anything special to make that happen, like at other positions, like if he were a cornerback or if he were some other backup in any other position. Playing a rotational position, he's kind of guaranteed rotational snaps. Play is at the league average or below, but provides hope for more contributions in 2026 when he enters camp as an incumbent and in better shape.
There you go. To me, that would be a phenomenal season. Okay. So, definitely a little bit different on that, but I loved it. I loved it. So on the tape, Ken, is there any other I just wanted to wrap it up. I know we got Ronnie to go to, but is there anything that I didn't mention that you see on tape, or are we pretty much on the same page when it comes
to think we're the same page. I mean, he doesn't really use his hands well for a guy who has really good length in terms of the pass rush. That was a problem. I don't think we talked about that yet. Pad level. So you'd expect a guy like that could chop, he could swim, he could use one arm longer than two, and it'd be really longer than two. He could show off his strength, as you sometimes see a Travis Jones do, by picking either shoulder of his opponent if he's ever blocked one-on-one, and trying to, you know, force his way through that. Kind of like thinking of speed to power for an edge rusher, except you're on the interior, and you're making a half man move on that guy in front of you. I just didn't see any of that. There's very, very little in the way of pressure from Jason Jones. I didn't actually look up his PFF pressures to see just how bereft he was of that. Okay. Well, the entire season, according to this, I'm looking at 24 here.
In the teens, maybe?
3 total pressures of any sort, according to PFF. That's absurdly low.
Because I remember looking at his pressures from previous seasons. I think he had 18 one year, 14 one year. So that does seem low.
18 career, according to this.
Maybe that's the number I saw then. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. That's low.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, it's pretty apparent just from watching him. I mean, he never plays pass downs, which is part of the problem, is that if you never play a passing down, you don't have a good opportunity generally to get a good pass rush result from the interior. You're much less likely to do that. But he's not without significant warts. You can't buy the frame. You can't teach the frame, maybe I should say. So hopefully he gets his strength together and ends up being a player that we can.
Your point, it's right there for him. The spot is right there for him. The Ravens did not double up the defensive tackle in the draft. Didn't take one. Aeneas Peebles is a different type of player. Mm-hmm. So it's right there for him.
Yeah, Peebles a 3-tech only, really, unless you're going to play him late in a game. Maybe you could play him on the inside. Okay, well, let's talk about Ronnie Stanley. 31 now, entering his 10th season. The new contract, I'm very excited about it. Obviously, he took a hometown discount here, but also I think it pretty well clears the way for him to be in the Ravens' Ring of Honor. I don't know how much that mattered to him. I don't know how much playing with Lamar Jackson mattered to him. I don't know how much playing with a winner mattered to him. I don't know how much he didn't just want to, he didn't want to move from Baltimore. But whatever the reasons, I'm happy he's here.
Me too. And I figured that it would be a priority of the Ravens. A lot of people had Ronnie on their wish list as priority number one. And if the Ravens were rebuilding or, had a down year coming, and maybe we didn't have a quarterback on the roster, I'm not sure it's a move that you would make for a 31-year-old player. But the deal was just so sweet. I mean, what a coup for the Ravens. I mean, this was an A-plus move. Who knows how it plays out, but even in retrospect, if things don't go as planned, this was a great signing.
Yeah, it was a really good signing, because an average left tackle in the National Football League will go for approximately that. Ronnie Stanley can be better than that. I think, honestly, this year he had a pretty average year for the league. PFF likes him a lot more than I do in terms of how good his year.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
There was big penalty year. Wasn't a great year for pressure as I saw it. He was allowing the cone to be impinged upon. Now, Jackson works well with that. And, you know, everybody's heard me say that 20 times probably on this show before. But it is something that is a trade-off you have with Ronnie. And I'm going to go through some of the components of where he lost points and how he did relative to 23 a little later. But essentially, that contract is 2 years for $44 million. It gives the Ravens, with the $16 million club option in 2027, that has some old made risk attached to it, because Ronnie may decide he doesn't want to play if the Ravens think he's worth $16 million and they don't want to extend the contract. It may not be something that would make him happy. It might be, you know, he might be on the fence about retiring, and that might be the thing that pushes him over. He'll be still a little young to not want another bite of the apple. But what do you think about that?
I mean, the contract says to me that he's, of course, has to be here this year and next year. And then 2027, if he's playing at an average level, he'll probably still be on the team. They have to eat a lot of money. They would save a good chunk, but this deal to me was more of a, we expect them to play, be our left tackle for 3 years. You know, you can get out of it in year three, but not without some pain and that kind of thing. So yeah, by that time he'll be entering his age 34 season, right? That'd be his age 34 season. Yep. So, at that position, it's not unheard of to play well into your mid 30s. There are a lot of veteran left tackles who are just talented enough to hang on. The thing is, what are you able to do with Ronnie at that age? And if, you know, some of his run blocking and things this year, I was really impressed with, even though, his pass blocking, I can see why, obviously we've talked about this many times, why PFF is higher on him in their grading system than you are. It's really his style of blocking. And Lamar handles it really well.
Yeah. I thought, you know, we saw some good things from him again down the field. Just real quickly, he will only be 33 in 2027. So he may or may not decide that he wants to play at age 34, but that's probably the season you're talking about anyway, after the 27 season. But the Ravens have that option. And, you know, I think one of the things I like about the contract beyond Stanley's play, which we'll get to in a second, I promise, is that it really provides options to the team. And that without a two-year runway for both Stanley and for Rosengarten, I don't think they would have had the comfort to go after Carson Vincent as they did. He's a pure developmental guy, should not see the field at all this year. The fact that they've signed Joe Noteboom should tell you very clearly that Noteboom is going to be the backup left tackle and not Vincent. He will take up a roster spot for as long as they can possibly stand it so that he can practice. But if push comes to shove at some point in the year, they may IR him anyway. That they just say, well, okay, work in the rate room, but we can't afford this roster spot anymore because we have too many walking wounded, say, at some point during the year.
Absolutely. You have Noteboom, and then you also have Emory Jones, who could play right tackle as well. So agreed with Vincent. I would say very outside shot that maybe they want to see what he has at left guard. But I think Vincent, coming from a smaller school, he needs a year. I thought when he got a chance to practice and play against better competition, he looked good, looked natural. It's the reason he got drafted where he did. But yeah, Ronnie gives us a lot of flexibility. Ronnie and Roger actually together, being that's a position of strength for the Ravens. A lot of teams would love to have those two guys for 2025.
Yeah. They got them for 2 years, 2025 and 2026. I do feel like a new way to characterize this relationship between Vincent and Warhop is that Warhop almost is so invested in Vincent that he'd like to hold his hand up his rear end and move his arms and feet like a sock puppet if he could do that to get Vincent to make the right moves. But Vincent is very technically behind. It's not just a matter of the physicality that he's short on, and the habits he got in before are, I think, pretty bad. And, you know, just watching the coaching go on, I mean, he's coaching on very basic stuff. Keep your hands out far enough, you know, kind of thing. Your hands got to lead on that play kind of thing. It's stuff that, like, lineman 101 stuff that he's kind of behind on, and hopefully picks it up fast and does the remodeling that he needs to do in terms of his body. But he seems like a still a fair distance away to me.
I think so too. I think that's kind of what makes it exciting, though, is that, you know, he's very, very physically gifted, and, you know, he can take that leap and be a very good player because he is so raw as a player. And, you know, I like what I've seen from him personality wise as well. You can't always tell, but he just seems like he wants to learn. He wants to know. He doesn't have an arrogance about him. He's got this kind of old soul about him. I think he's got a good chance. And you never know with these late round developmental picks. Most of them don't work out. But yeah, you know, having Ronnie definitely gives us that roster flexibility to where Vincent in an ideal world doesn't see the field this year. And then, you know, let's face it, when you're facing Myles Garrett, Trey Hendrickson, and then Alex Highsmith, Herbig, I mean, those are guys that, you know, when you play those teams, even Ronnie's going to get some help when you're trying to really go downfield on these guys. So, you know, it's just an impressive, left tackles get paid and they deserve to get paid what they do.
All right, let's go back to Ronnie now. He played all 19 games. That's actually the first time he's ever done that in his career.
Yep.
He played as many as 15 before in a season, but that was that. Well, no, 15 plus playoffs, but he never played more than 15 of 16 or 17 in the regular season, and logged a career high 1,221 snaps. He did go up in penalties very sharply the last 2 years. He had one penalty in 22, and obviously had less playing time then, 10 in 23 and 14 in 24. And as surprising as it might seem, the 14 and 24 was actually an improvement, which we'll get into, over the 23 season. Doesn't seem like it should be, and it's a very high total still for the league, but because he had less snaps and the penalties were more severe, he had a really better year in 24 in a way there. But he was penalized the sixth most of any left tackle in the league.
Yeah, still too many. You know, you had the cheap ones opening night against the Chiefs.
Yep.
But even if you take those, what was it, three of them?
Ken? Three illegal formations, yeah.
Yeah, even if you take those away, 11 penalties, you expect better. What we did not see from Ronnie was him getting beat and shed and the strip sacks of Lamar getting blindsided. So I think overall he had a better year in 24, his best year probably since the injury.
Yes, I would agree. His best year since the injury. I've got him at 0.70 overall, and that works out to about 0.76 after you make an adjustment for the average adjustment for the entire year. But this 0.70 is the raw score. And what I want to do is break down the 0.70, which is up from 0.63 the previous year, which was really pretty poor year he had in 23. But in 24, his missed blocks were 92 for the year, which is a loss of 8 points out of the 100. And that's 2 points better than he was in 23. So if you're looking for how did he improve, he reduced missed blocks. Some of that's in terms of not getting beat off the snap in a pass block where the pressure didn't have time to develop. Some of it's not missing as many run blocks. Some of it's a little bit better mobility. So it's actually a mishmash of things that I'd have a hard time pinpointing for you, but plus 0.02 from 23 overall there. Penetrations that caused losses on run plays, pretty low both seasons. He was 1.5 the year before, 3.5 this year. It doesn't really result in a significant change between the two. It's still about 0.01, 1 point of the 100, that you can think of it that way, that he lost in both seasons. So no really significant change, about half a point. There's some rounding error that'll show up later. That's probably a source of it right here. Pressures, I have him for 28, and that was minus 11 points and no significant change from the previous year. That's just pressures, not quarterback hits or sacks. And so P PFF has downgraded some of his quarterback hits and sacks because somebody else finished the play, and they don't give away the quarterback hit or sack if somebody else finishes. But they still will give you a pressure for it. And then I have other pressures where the cone is being impeded that I don't like. So no significant change in pressures, which is probably the most disappointing number, because that number wasn't good before, and he let it stay at a not good number, is where I was. The penetration number wasn't significantly bad before.
Yeah, you know, I think that sometimes there are some fine lines between that, especially when it comes to the bull rush specifically. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll like Lamar makes up for a lot of it, but did that bull rush affect the quarterback or not? So he may be credited for a pressure, and it may not have affected the quarterback on that play, or vice versa. He could have not been credited with the pressure, but man, did it really affect the quarterback on that play, because he was losing so badly so early before he corrected himself that the quarterback said, man, I got to get this out. It caught its eye. That's so on and so forth. But I thought overall pass blocking, I thought that he was about the same, maybe a little better last year. Where I saw improvement for Ronnie was the run game. I thought he was better.
All right, let me continue on with the other stuff, then we'll go back to the run game in a second. Okay. So quarterback hits 6.33 minus 0.02, actually a slight improvement of 0.01 from 2023. So that was good. And again, you'll see a lower number for PFF because I'll give fractional quarterback hits, and those are plays on which he's contributing to a quarterback hit, but he might not have been charged for it, and PFF has it probably as a pressure. They certainly would have a downgrade in their system for it, even if they don't have it labeled as a pressure. And then sacks are at 5 1/6. Minus 0.03 from his total, and that's 0.02 better than it was in 23. So big improvement there, or good size improvement anyway, because he was minus 0.05 and he went to minus 0.03 in that category, which is, that's, you know, 40% less sacks per snap in terms of what he did. So good improvement there. The penalties, he had 42 points in penalties on the year, which is bad. But it actually, for a couple reasons, it was better. One is I changed the system to make the declinable fouls more important. So his false starts, he's getting off with a minus 2 instead of a minus 3 in prior years. And his holding penalties, he's a minus 5 instead of a minus 6 in prior years, because it's minus 2 per 5 yards plus one more point if the penalty is declinable. So a illegal downfield is worth minus 3, whereas a false start's only worth minus 2. Illegal formation, also minus 3. And he got tagged for some of that in this ridiculous early crusade or witch hunt that the referees were on. So that did cost him some. But he was 3 points better, actually, than he was in 23 in penalties, which ended up being the biggest single thing. So it works out to 8 points better in total, which, again, I say there's some rounding error because the pressures and penetrations were about half a point lost in either category, a little bit less than that. So overall, you know, in terms of how his deductions worked out and where he got his 7 points, that's just a overview I can give you. But let's go back to the run blocking and tell me what you saw.
Sure, yeah. So those numbers confirmed that, you know, to you, he was a little bit better in the pass blocking, but pretty much the same. And that's what I saw. The run blocking, though, I thought that Ronnie really bailed us out, especially early in the season. Those first three games, especially, there were plays that, you know, we tried to run to foul Lele and Rosengarten's side, and it was a no-go. And we were having trouble getting Derrick Henry involved. And what was the old faithful? The pitch left, just a basic pitch left, get Ronnie out in space. And you can see this when his scouting cut up that I did and on his highlights. Just so many examples of Ronnie either in space or performing reach blocks to his left and back to his right later in the season. But I thought that if you took Ronnie's mobility from even 2023, that some of those games, you know, could have been swayed a different way. Like I thought that he was much as you think of a right guard leading your running attack for most teams, most years, that Ronnie was actually an anchor in our running game, especially early in the season. And then you looked at the last game, Same thing. We had problems running it, but that pitch plays and running off of Ronnie's, the B gap to his right and the C gap to his left, just seemed like our most consistent run of the year. On mute again, Ken. Double shot.
Yeah, just the other thing I mentioned about is run blocking. The Ravens' run game has a ton of misdirection involved in it. When they're misdirecting to the right and they run it, boot it left with Lamar in particular, Ronnie Stanley is a perfect guy to kind of fade away into the background and leave himself out in space where he can make a really useful block. And we've seen that several times in the last couple of years where he's out leading a play, only blocker in front with only really one guy who could possibly get Lamar. And he makes a block and it's a completely unfair walk in for Lamar. The other is Ronnie is back making plays down the field. So he's running down the field to try and make blocks. This is the Ronnie Stanley that I remember from 2019 that could get down the field and really help you make run blocks there and would be very useful. In my system, there's a lot of run blocking points lost on the backside of plays when the tackle just can't make a play. And good athletic tackles can make such a play. And that's why I leave the zero in there on such plays, even though some people think it's a little unfair to charge that backside guy. But fast offensive tackles, you know, guys who have some mobility, they move downfield, they try and block a corner or a safety or somebody, and that can occasionally turn a 10-yard play into a 30-yard play. So you want to make sure you get those when you can. I love seeing that athleticism out of Ronnie again. You know, he's always been pretty good in terms of moving up a half level and ceiling when that's what they need him to do, kicking out when that's what they need him to do. Always been pretty good at that. And I just thought he made more of the mobility plays this year. He's not perfect against the run, by the way. He's not the perfect guy against a really good edge setter, I don't think. But he certainly, I thought he had a much improved year in that regard.
Yeah, it opened up the playbook. There's some really creative plays that he was involved with where he's blocking guys downfield and finishing with a pancake and giving the first down signal himself. There's a big Derrick Henry run. I believe it was the one, left sideline. Again, Ronnie key block, opening up a lot of Derrick Henry runs. So running game, screen game. There's one with Isaiah Likely that stands out, one with Justice Hill that stands out, where, as you said, you reminded me, where he's just going downfield and trying to get a piece of whoever he can. The big convoy play that people might remember, I think that was Justice Hill with just all three linemen just leading. You know, Ronnie was the only one that got a piece of somebody on that. It opens up the playbook for us with short passes, the running game, that Ronnie was just excellent, I thought. In his run blocking and his mobility clearly seemed healthier to me. Ken.
Good solid mobility when asked to pull as well. So when they're running the counter plays, that was working out just fine. I still think, and you know, I don't really think he made his hay coming back from his 4/23 season with the run blocking game. I want to be clear about that. It's penalties and the reduction in quarterback hits and sacks. The reduction in missed blocks is not insignificant, but that's a mix of run and pass where he gained there. Probably more run than pass. Maybe it's three quarters run if I had to say so. But I still think it was basically good pass blocking that brought it back. And I also think it was good pass blocking, because if it was really all run blocking based, it couldn't possibly have the same value as a uptick in pass blocking. And I still look at his pass blocking and say, you know, I don't know how much it can improve at this point, but I think it could potentially, there could still be a reduction in all forms of pressure that could come off of this year, where he had, a good pass blocking year, but I don't think it was a great pass blocking year. And I know how PFF scores it. It's just different from how I look at it.
Very fair. I'm with you.
A lot of the slow death pressures, we talked about them. Let's not go into that anymore. Trades ground for Mirror, still his way of doing business. That's a day at the office for Ronnie Stanley. Really, he's never been a physical pass blocker, which is something that, you know, you sometimes see from a lot of other tackles. You certainly see, you know, an Orlando Brown or whatnot is a very physical guy, uses his length, and then he pushes somebody south of the pocket with force. Ronnie's never done that. He has length like nobody, but he doesn't really use that with a lot of physicality the way a John Ogden did, certainly, or the way Orlando Brown did, or the way either Orlando Brown did. Let's put it that way.
I was going to say, I did see him finish guys running the cone on him a few times, but that's really not what you get with Ronnie. And but the reason it stood out to me as a positive is that we hadn't really seen that since he was injured in 2020. And there are a few examples of him finishing a guy desperately trying to turn the cone where his feet and his mobility are good enough now to where he can make that guy pay for that. But overall, not a physical player. You would not compare him to either Orlando Brown or J.O. in that way.
Mm-hmm. 2025, just in terms of things you want to see this season, aside from health, and we of course want to see that. What else do you want to see?
Yeah, I mean, is this a good season, great season, Ken? Or
well, we can do that if you want. If I've
okay, because it's like directly to me, it's directly tied. What I would like to see from him is for a good season for me would be for him to cut down on the penalties, and you know, and you said health aside, but to me, that's really what it's all about. If he gives us what he gave us last year, where the pass blocking is what it was, the run blocking what it was, and he can cut down a handful of penalties, I would consider that a good season for a 31-year-old. I just want him healthy, and if we're able to operate the offense like we were last year with him at left tackle, to me, that's good.
Okay. Well, that certainly would be good. And in my mind, I wanted to play 14-plus games. I really have quantitative things, but I think that's one for a good season that has to be part of Ronnie's thing. He's available for all playoff games. I'm going to include that in there. His health, mobility, and the quality of his play are similar to 2024. I think that'd be good. I don't think he had a truly exceptional season, not by Ronnie Stanley standards and not by NFL standards for left tackles. So I'd be happy with that again. I think if he were a slightly above average NFL left tackle, I think that's absolutely fine. I think I would like his penalties to be cut to the league average rate. Now, there'll be a reduction in those IF flags, which is part of the problem. It's probably more than 20% of the problem actually was in the Chiefs game, those three IF flags, because each of them are 9 points in total deduction just from that. But he had a bunch of holding calls as well. He had an illegal man downfield call. He had a bunch of false starts. The false starts are generally coming because even in a true pass set, he's jumping out too early to compensate for not being the physical, not being the having the quickness he did early in his career. So that's something I want to improve, and it may or may not be realistic for those in particular to be improved. So that's all I've got for a good season. Nothing. It's no unattainable goals as far as I'm concerned.
Love it. Yeah. For me, a good season would be pretty much what he did last year. And I think he can do a little bit better. I want to see the penalties cut down for sure.
How about a great season?
Great season. You know, I want to shoot for obviously the health, and for him to be, he has to be as healthy as, an NFL player can be. They're all beat up, but going into the playoffs, especially is important. I'm glad you mentioned that. But, you know, I would say that his play warrants a true Pro Bowl selection, not a this guy backed out and that guy backed out, so Ronnie's at the Pro Bowl. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Ravens make the Super Bowl and he can't make the Pro Bowl because we're in the Super Bowl, but where he's named as named to the Pro Bowl right away. And, of course, with that, you would see an uptick in his pass blocking numbers and penalties for sure.
Yeah. I'm with you there. I say BetterHelp lets him play 16-plus regular season games with increased per-snap productivity in the run game and more total pass-blocking snaps with results like 2024. An effective Ravens offense keeps him in the Pro Bowl discussion, just like you. No question about it, the 2025 contract value, and the Ravens remain hopeful he's a 3-year solution and not just a 2-year solution at left tackle.
There you go. Yeah, we talked about that contract earlier where he's locked in for sure for 2 years. Ravens cannot cut him. But year three is one of those. Yeah, we can save, you know, 12 mil or whatever it is, somewhere around there. Maybe post June 1st is something different. but we really don't want to because we're eating about the same amount. So yeah, this is it's an important contract. He's a very, very important player on this team. I think that overall, even though he didn't have a great, graded season last year, Ronnie coming back and playing like he did last year was one of the more important developments on the team. I mean, just think of how our offseason would have had to been differently handled if Ronnie, you know, was hurt last year and really, you know, it was, didn't earn himself the type of contract that other teams were willing to give him. You think about Marlin and his play, his resurgence. You think about how well Roger played. You think about how well Derrick Henry fit in this offense and Lamar continuing to grow. But Ronnie is up there as far as most of important developments of 2024. And if he can do that, if he can be himself, give us 3 years of what he gave us last year, the Ravens won't regret that contract.
Yeah, no, that's certainly true. If he played the way he did last year for 3 years, he'd be fine. We'd be very happy with that exchange. Jason, always a pleasure to talk football with you. Can you tell folks where they can talk football with you online?
Sure. It's Huddle It Up Films on both YouTube and X, Twitter. You know, again, during the summer, a little bit sporadic and squirrely with my content and how often I'm online, social media. But there's plenty there to keep you busy as far as the player highlights. I'm still getting a lot of views, still getting a lot of comments on my channel. And I check my channel often, even though I'm not on the microphone doing stuff. We'll save that for when we kick back up in late July, August again. But you know, thanks to you. Thank everybody in my football family. Feel free to follow me on Twitter and that kind of thing. But really looking forward to it. Really enjoyed all the draft stuff and all the regular season coverage. This OTAs, you know, kick back up as we're recording now. You get the itch for football, Ken.
Yeah, I know. It's fun. I'm enjoying being out there. And they open up more to the media the next 2 weeks. So it's going to be like six OTAs that are open, where it's only going to be two before. So it was fun to be there for rookie minicamp and for that. And I'm enjoying it. That's for sure.
Well, if you have any information that you're unwilling to share publicly, you know how to get a hold of me. So, you know, all that stuff that you're not supposed to say, you can trust me, Ken.
All right. Always a pleasure, Jason. Yeah. Other folks out there, hit me up with a DM if you have interest in doing a film study short. All ideas are welcome. I'd love to hear them. DMs are always open. Other folks, thank you for your incredible loyalty to this show. It's really showing up. It has not gone unnoticed, and I still got to try and continue to promote this show for what it is. So folks out there, if you know that one additional person that you think might like this content, show them this, show them maybe how to get to it on a computer instead of on their phone if they're not used to downloading podcasts. And I'll appreciate that for sure. Jason, thanks again for coming on.
Man, thank you so much. And thanks to everybody listening. Love Ken's family too, man. Football's family.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it, it's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply. Available in app only.